Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 12:30. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our first guests are local treasures, Jan Wolf and Juanita Daniels from the Atascadero Republican Women's Federated. We're going to be talking about the primary election. Now that it's over, what are our next steps in the general? And then we'll also talk about what's going on with Slo County Republicans being locked out of volunteer poll worker jobs by the county clerk reporter, and also challenges of maintaining and growing Republican-oriented interest groups in California. Jan and Juanita, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. And then at 1 o'clock, we're going to have my brethren from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Will Barnaby. We're going to take a multi-generational look at the culture, politics, and the state of our country and world, how cryptocurrency and artificial intelligence will shape our future, and reflections on the United States and the quincentennial. I finally get to the point I can say that. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. And I'm going to give you this is an important question of the day, and this is going to be the question for the entire 90 minutes. Call in and tell me what is the most important aspect of the Declaration of Independence to you. So, and we'll talk about that throughout the day. So, Jan and Juanita, who's going to start? Tell us a bit about yourselves and how you got involved in ARUF.
So I got involved it was the Clinton years, mm-hmm. and I was new to the county. We just moved up here from L.A. And I went to the fair, and there was a booth that the Republican Party had at the fair. And I started talking to the women there and realized that, you know, they were welcoming my opinions. I could say kind of anything I wanted. And I didn't really have to be super politically correct. And I just found that so refreshing that I didn't join right away because I was working full time. But as soon as I was working and I could go to their meetings, I joined.
So that was like 30 years ago.
No.
Well, no, I'm talking about when you went during the Clinton administration.
It was 99.
Okay, so it was after the Clinton administration. Do you find that the art of discourse has suffered somewhat in the last 30 years? 27 years, if that makes you feel better?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes. Of course.
So now, so it's just like Los Angeles now. We can't speak our mind.
Unfortunately, you know, that's largely true. But it depends on where you are. In our club, we don't shut down opinions. Anybody's opinion is worthy of being heard. We believe in free speech. So even when we have unpopular speakers at times, people who express unpopular opinions, we reserve the right to challenge those people. So anyway,
good
free speech is a rock of our
well it should it should be actually
country.
It should be,
yeah.
Unfortunately, the other side doesn't believe that.
Well,
so
yeah.
Anyway, what about you, Juanita? How did you get started in the
so group? See, what, 8 years ago I think it was, I go to my first meeting, and I wanted to get involved. I had never been involved in a Republican Party. Very involved with the Elks, but not the.
Are they traditionally Republican?
Oh, you can't mention it.
Really?
That's what, no, you can't mention
partisan.
It. That's one of their oaths.
You can't talk politics.
No.
You can't talk religion.
Not really, but you know what's really? It's you have your little cliques, and there's our little groups that can talk. But we don't talk politics in the lodge.
Well,
and unfortunately.
What fun is that?
I know. It's fun. And it goes, it's a very good cause. It goes to a lot of Elks is a great. I've been involved for 21 years.
Well, you have your lunches at the Elks Club.
Yes. We do. So we brought it back to the Elks. We were at a hotel, and it was taking all of our money.
Mm-hmm.
And our money goes to our girls going to conferences. We have we never have had to pay for a speaker, but we give scholarships to the Tascadero High School.
Mm-hmm.
We gave $2,000 scholarships to the high school. That's a big part. But the big part is sending our girls to conferences to learn to bring back to our club. And they're always really interesting. But when I got involved, they said, oh, you know, does anybody know anything about computers? And I unfortunately raised my hand. And I thought they just needed a little tiny
bit. They found a pigeon.
Help. But no, it started with a newsletter, and I love it. I mean the newsletter it's a synopsis of our meetings. It has little memes I find on the internet for our right side. And I'm free to put whatever I want in there.
It does a great job.
Yeah, and then the emails, we get emails, especially from Kathleen Goble. She's a great source out there. Anytime I get emails, Jansen's emails, I send them out mm-hmm. to our club. Because there's a lot of people that can't even come to our meetings, so I send them out to our club. And sometimes people go, do we need all these? Yes, you do.
Well, you got to keep people informed.
And
motivated.
And this AB...
Well, we'll get to that. Don't get ahead of my playlist, okay?
But I do, you know, I send out any legislative things, so that's what my job is.
Good. All right. How many members
have 150, and we are getting several new ones. They keep some of our members say, we have friends that really want to join, so we're excited. We had a girl walk in the other day. She just joined.
Mm-hmm.
So she had gone. Yeah. She used to help at the fair. She used to help it, and she got she just didn't go anymore. Mm-hmm. And she said, I want to be involved again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's great.
Good. All right. And then I guess, you know, you guys have kind of had some consolidation of your chapters in the last year or two, huh? What happened?
We have had a couple of clubs shut down, and I think partly it's a demographic issue.
Okay.
A lot of older women. Mm-hmm. Some people have moved out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
This has affected our club a little bit, too. Some people have died.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the club, when I joined in about 2004 or 5, I think the club only had about 65 members.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to, you know, expand up to 150... Actually, I think it's 151.
Yeah.
Who's counting?
Yeah.
Who's counting?
And
we're counting every single person.
San Luis closed, so Los Osos gets some of them. We get some of them, and that's great. We get people from Paso and Creston and... Mm-hmm. You know, and in fact, it's so cool that the people want to come from far away.
Yeah, so North County's really well represented. And how do the Republican Women Federated groups relate to the state party and also the national party?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very involved in supporting whatever the Republican Party of San Luis Obispo County does.
Mm-hmm.
We will assist at events. And this is, I'm speaking for the three clubs that your station reaches, essentially.
Yes.
Our club, Paso, and Estero Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all very cooperative with the local RP SLO, and that's the one that we really have the most contact with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. But again, you go to state conventions? You go to the state convention?
Yes.
Yes.
Our club is also a member of the CFRW, California Federation of Republican Women. And then every state that has a state charter is a part of the National Federation of Republican Women, which was established in 1938.
Okay.
So it's a very long-standing organization overall, nationwide.
And I even heard them on Newsmax the other day, and it was even said the NFRW was on Newsmax, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm part of that.
Well, there you go. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
there's
great.
Hundreds of thousands of women involved.
What is just out of curiosity, what is the national group, you know, focusing on right now? Was that discussed on Newsmax?
You know, I'm trying to even think what she. It was so surprising.
Commenting on a single issue, possibly.
Yeah,
usually
it's not. Yeah. It's not a single issue. I was just shocked that and happy to hear our name.
Well, that's good. All right. So, and then you do monthly meetings at the Elks Club. I know last month you had Eric Gorham.
Yes, he was found.
What does he know?
He's our representative. I know him. We usually limit people to about 20 minutes and then 10 minutes for questions. I think he talked for about 45 minutes,
yes,
and everybody was very enthralled by
questions.
What he had to say.
Yes.
Because he had updates on the election, which I guess we've only recently gotten what the true election results are. So that was very handy to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then he even previewed some of what Dan Dow, our DA, is going to talk about when he comes next month.
And so that's coming up here. What's the date on that?
That's going to be on
July 28th.
July 28th, Dan Dow will be speaking at our club. I have a list of the other people who are speaking at the other clubs in July. In case
go ahead.
Okay. So in on July 13th, the Paso Club, which meets at 5 p.m., they're going to have Dora Carey on. And she's a Romanian woman who is now an American citizen, but she grew up under communism was ruling Romania.
She was
she has some amazingly
stories.
Jarring stories of growing up in communism. Mm-hmm.
She was actually a Romanian sniper.
Really?
And she's a quilter.
She's a quilter.
Wow.
She has Orange Dot quilting shops.
Right. That's why I knew the name. That's right.
And she is a wonderful speaker. And then
we've had her.
we had her a couple, about a year ago. And then at the Estero Bay Republican Women Federated, our candidate for the 30th State Assembly seat, Shannon Kessler, is going to speak July 16th.
Okay.
And she was one of the Republicans that got through the jungle primary.
And we had her, too.
We had her, yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess Eric is doing this big event with Devin Nunes and R.P. Slow, right?
Yes.
That's going to be at Raven Ranch.
Yeah, that is going to be on Saturday, August 1st from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Raven Ranch. General admission is $125. Devin Nunes, the chairman of the President's Intelligence Advisory Board, is going to be the speaker.
Thank God, yeah.
And
he won't be able to tell you anything.
Well, then,
because
well,
it's intelligence.
Then he'd have to kill us. Yeah. And so he's going to be, if you want tickets, you can go onto the RPSLOC website and get tickets for that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got a lot going on, and then you're going to be at the fair, too.
Oh, yes.
Yes, all the Republican groups, like the Lincoln Club, RP Slow, the various women's clubs, all support the fair and staff the fair.
Yep.
And that is so much fun, talking to people. Who are coming by and just want to chat. And just kind of like I was, 27 years ago, I wanted to just be able to ask questions, and it's a really fun.
So it's
thing
a good recruiting opportunity.
When I was working there 1 year, I was watching this kid, and I'm going, God, what is he staring at? Well, we have this television behind me, and we have all these great memes on there, and the kid was just watching them all and just enthralled, and it's just really neat. It's a neat experience.
Good. Yeah. Good. So let's move on. This was a topic you wanted to talk about, Juanita, this AB 2017, which is an attempt to get Muslim holidays recognized on our state calendars so that people can take even more days off from work and also an opportunity to indoctrinate our children.
Yes.
And so it's always amazing to me. We need to indoctrinate our kids about Muslim holidays, but they can't talk about Christmas or Hanukkah or anything like that.
Right.
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 So tell us a little bit about what you guys have been doing on this.
Well, we all the clubs, and including our club, 180, has put out information about the necessity of calling our state representative, John Laird. Now, he's a Democrat, but maybe if he hears enough from enough people, we will be able to have this bill go down in a defeat. Basically, the problem I have with it is it's another bunch of holidays that are going to take away from schooling for kids.
Yes. Well, and after that, they'll be doing the call to prayer five times a day.
Well, I don't think that's, you say it in jest, but I think...
No, I'm not.
You're not. Well, that's the problem. I mean, exactly. That we
can't
really
even
don't
pray.
Want that.
Mm-hmm. We can't, the Americans can't even pray in school.
Right.
So...
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I noticed that this holiday is on the national calendar. I see it. It was just on, I think, recently. Because I look on my Outlook calendar.
I'm not even sure how to pronounce it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't want to make a mistake.
So, and again, I want to encourage people, you know, when they get these notices from Atascadero Republican Women or RP Slow, it really does make a difference.
Yeah, it does.
To write your legislator, because they have one staff person in every office that counts the letters and the telephone calls they get, and they know based on their demographic work that every call and every letter is worth so many votes.
Yeah.
And so I really encourage you to do that. And I don't do it enough myself but still it's important to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we do not, that a lot. But this was very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of related topics. And we got like 2 or 3 minutes left in this segment.
Okay.
What is your take about the dearth of pride? You know, they've done these polls, the dearth of pride that many Americans now have or the lack of pride in their country. I mean, isn't this kind of shocking to you?
It is to me because, well, I'm old, but when I went to school, we were taught civics, probably in fifth or sixth grade.
Right.
We were taught American history in an unbiased way. And, you know, if you don't understand history, then you're doomed to repeat the bad stuff.
Right.
I think that's happening now. It's very shocking to me, and it's very disturbing. And I'm sure it is. I definitely speak for every Republican in our clubs. We don't understand where the hate for this country comes from.
I just heard an HOA group is not allowing anybody to
San Diego
fly the American flag. I've never heard of that.
It's astonishing.
Yeah,
this is America.
It really is.
Yeah, they're finding. This is down in San Diego. I saw that.
Yeah.
And they're finding their members if you have a publicly displaying a flag.
I'm getting the shivers.
You know, it's really terrible.
I wonder how they'd react if they were flying, you know, some other country's flag or, you know.
What's your take on the whole rise of socialism in the United States?
You're asking some very difficult questions.
Why?
I don't really understand because maybe these people who are voting for the Democrat socialists are not property owners, are not job holders, do not understand how capitalism is the best thing that ever happened to the Western world. I'd ask you the same question. What's your take on it?
It seems very ridiculous. You know, again, so one of the things that we do at the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society is we get together once a month and we're all guys that are in different generational cohorts. And we basically discuss these topics.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a generational. I'm a big fourth turning guy, the Strauss and Howe theory of the fourth turning. And you should look it up. I'll send you some stuff.
Okay.
Folks, when we get back, we're going
to
talk about some more issues. We'll continue this.
Send it us up. Pass it on.
I also want to talk about the issues of poll watching. What is it, adopt a poll?
Yes.
In the next segment. So stand by. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Juanita McDaniel and Jan Wolf from the Atascadero Republican Women Federated. Call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. And again, my question for everybody for the day, you can call in because I'm really interested in your response on this. The most important aspect of the Declaration of Independence, and how do you like that? We got a caller. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters.
Hi, good afternoon. Hey, I've just been reading the most encouraging thing about America, and it has to do with the 250 years old. And Prager University, Dennis Prager, has got all these different things clear back to the 1800s mm-hmm. about how good America was and how people got to come here. And he talks about the judicial guys that are on the bench up there.
Okay, let's answer the question of the day. What's the most important part of the Declaration of Independence to you, real quickly? Because these guys here have some more important stuff to share. But what's the most important part of the Declaration for you?
Well, how free we are. We're very, very. We're the most free country in the whole wide world.
How about the fact that our rights are given to us by God and not by the government?
Amen.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, I know you guys were kind of had some a skirmish with the county clerk recorder's office, individual or group-wise. We won't go into all the details on that. But, you know, you a number of members of the Republican women wanted to be, not really poll watchers, but they wanted to be part of the Adopt-a-Poll program.
Right. Or just work the polls.
Or work the polls.
Right.
So tell us, and You were rejected basically on because from what I could read is that you kind of went in as a Republican group, and that's somewhat understandable
for over 10 years.
We've been doing it,
but you've been doing it for 10 years,
and even this happened in the 2024 election.
Okay, that's right.
And up until that point, there was no problem. There was no problem until.
Sorry.
There was no problem until the 24 election cycle, because prior to that, we'd always taken a poll, adopted a poll.
But of course, they allow the, whoops, we got another caller. Well, we thought we had another caller. We can't seem to get rid of that call. Okay, it'll go away. Go away. My arms aren't long enough in the studio to push the right button sometimes. Anyway, so again, and I mean, I think the thing that jumped out at me about this issue was the fact that you've got what's the other group that
we went under? Slow Tea Party?
No. The League of Women's Voters.
Yes.
Who are clearly
That's
a Democrat organization.
That's how we found. So what happened was when we got rejected by Elena Kino to be a Republican Party, we could not be a Democrat. Well, I don't know if the Democrats do one. Anyway, so the two Republican women parties were rejected. So I got to thinking about it. Okay, what do we do? One of our members owned a business. I thought, nope. Let's ask the Slow County Tea mm-hmm. Party, which is a nonpartisan, and we were accepted,
mm-hmm.
except for this last
election.
Well,
individuals were. We as a club.
We were accepted for two elections.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last election in March, several of us tried to go with the Adopt-a-Poll, put in Slow County Tea Party. No one was called.
Hmm.
People in our club went and just put individual names, and they got accepted.
Okay. Hmm. Well, and so you feel like you did have enough representation in the end.
Yes, because I heard from several members that they got accepted. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that they were able to work out there, because that's what they, we
okay.
need. We
Good.
Need eyes.
All right.
The club missed out on, earning some money for doing the Adopt-a-Poll.
Okay, so how did that work?
Well, because the it wasn't the club doing the poll workers. It wasn't the club supplying poll workers. It was individual members going in as individuals. And in that instance, they're not going to get reimbursed.
I see. Yeah.
The Adopt-A-Poll makes one check, and there was one check to the Republican Club or to the Slo County Tea Party.
Okay.
So, but the club did make money. We made $600
in the past.
So, do you mean to tell? So do the League of Women's Voters make money on this?
Oh, yes, I would think so.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
that's interesting.
Yeah, they're going in as a single entity.
All right. Yeah. We got another couple of minutes here. So, you know, one of the things that I got, and I know we talked about this a little, Jan, and you said you're not ready to talk about all these things, but I know that this is a function. You know, I got an email from Carl DeMeo. I'm sure everybody did. Registered, talking about all of the ballot initiatives we're going to be facing. You know, voter ID, which is important to us.
Absolutely.
Save Prop 13, which is really important to us.
That's incredibly important in our county. That's got a lot of retirees.
There's apparently an opportunity to. I don't know what this one's about. This is stop the savings tax. That must be a tax on like capital gains or something like that.
Yeah, I think that might be referring to the billionaire.
No,
tax.
That's separately listed here.
Oh, okay.
So I guess the point is you have somebody in your group, and I'm sure Pastor Robles does as well.
Yeah.
That really digs into this stuff.
Yes, each club has a legislative chair, and every month at our meetings, that person gets up and brings us up to date on, you know, what's going on. And we will, because I've heard like 12 propositions, I think, mm-hmm. on the ballot coming up in November.
Yes.
So we will be trying very hard to educate our women about that.
Well, I know that after Labor Day, that's going to be a primary focus of this show, is educating people on each of these.
Oh, excellent.
Because we got to get out and vote, folks. I mean, you know, we could talk about all the vote counting issues and all the this and that, but the bottom line is if we don't get out and vote, we're never going to win.
People say that their vote isn't worth anything. It is.
All right. Juanita and Jan, thanks for coming in. We'll do it again.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
That sounds great.
Folks, I'll be back
on
the other side. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'll be back on the other side of the break with Jay, Kaylin, and Will, members of the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society. So stand by.
Protecting what matters on the right choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guests are three of my brothers from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Will Barnaby. We're going to be talking about taking a multi-generational look at the culture, politics, and the state of our country and world, how cryptocurrency and artificial intelligence will shape the future, and reflections on the United States as we head into the semi-cinquentennial. Actually, we're in the semi-cinquentennial week these days. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
It's pretty tight in here, folks. And you're gonna have, when you talk, Kaylin, you're gonna have to jump on that microphone. So I'm gonna have you guys do a quick reintroduction. I mean, Will, you've been on the show a couple of times, but not as a member of the MGGS. I have not. Yeah, so this is gonna be your maiden voyage. So just reintroduce yourself real quickly.
Good afternoon. I'm Will Barnaby with Central Coast Lending.
That's all you're going to say?
That's it.
Okay. And what generational cohort do you live in?
I am Gen X.
You are Gen X.
The best. The best.
You're an early wave Gen X, right?
I think you just called me old. I'm pretty sure that was a dig right away.
Well, you know what I am, so I'm a lot older than you. I was thinking I'm still not old enough to be your father, though.
No. You could be a much younger uncle in the family.
Yeah, something like that. All right, and Jay?
Yeah, Jay with Central Coast Moving and Storage, and I am a late-wave millennial.
And
Yeah, I'm Kaylin Clark. I am with Hammers IT, and I am also a late-wave millennial.
All right. And, you know, I forgot to tell everybody, thanks for introducing yourself, guys. By the way, folks, you can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. And the question of the day, which we got one caller, and we're going to be talking about this with the guys here towards the end of the show, is what is the most important aspect of the Declaration of Independence to you? What do you, why do you think this is the seminal document of our country? So, all right. So we're going to start with something that, you know, I have to say, Kaylin and Jay have kind of opened my eyes to a little bit, and it's an evolving topic, really. I mean, I think if I hadn't done the research after we talked the last time, I wouldn't even want to talk about this but let's talk about the evolution of cryptocurrency, really, and where it seems to be going, especially really under the Trump administration. What are you breaking up the studio here, Jay? So what we're talking about here, folks, is cryptocurrency as, I guess, you know, it's basically stable coin, right, that we're talking about. As opposed to, define the difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum versus what's referred to as stable coin.
So, yeah, I mean, cryptocurrency in general is just a way to classify a new technology. So, like, why crypto matters is, like, the internet gave us the ability to move information instantly, and cryptocurrencies attempt to do the same, but with value. So not just information, but value. So stablecoins aren't trying to replace the dollar. They're trying to move the dollar faster and cheaper. So that's the big difference between stablecoins and, like, a Bitcoin or an Ethereum, is each cryptocurrency has its own utility and what it's intended to be used for. So stablecoins is generally a digital token designed to maintain a stable value, and often it's pegged to the U.S. dollar.
Right, or treasuries or something
correct.
Like that.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, because I even found out in doing my research that even the Ameriprise now allows me to have a crypto account with them.
Right.
And
right.
with using stablecoin.
Exactly.
So... again, why would I want to use a stable coin as opposed to a credit card or dollars or something like that?
Yeah, so I guess some of the potential benefits would be like faster payments. So the blockchain technology allows for instantized verification of a transfer, lower transaction costs. So that kind of addresses like why you would want to use that over something like a credit card, is there's just lower transaction cost, and then 24/7 settlement. Hmm. So like right now with the dollar, if you were to, you know, send money over the weekend, you have to wait till business hours. You're confined to the hours of business. So stable coins allow for a 24/7 settlement. So even easier international transfers as well.
So it's almost like creating like an international currency.
Kind of.
Because basically, if you have your stablecoin wallet on your phone,
right,
and I'm in Timbuktu,
right,
and there's another person that can take that cryptocurrency, then I can just transact. I don't have to go exchange money at an exchange anymore.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That makes some sense.
And so, like, some of the risk is not every stablecoin mm-hmm. is backed equally. So that's mm-hmm. kind of like your question, the difference between, like, a Bitcoin or a stablecoin. It's very, very important for the consumer to understand what it's backed by.
Yeah.
You know, what institution is verifying this stablecoin or this coin in general, the cryptocurrency.
What are your thoughts, Kaylin, on this?
I would say
because you're a lot smarter than Jay.
No, I love that. I would say that the U.S. dollar has already sort of turned digital in the last couple decades. Most of our currency is online anyway. It's all numbers on a screen, and cryptocurrency can be seen as a technology that builds a foundation to support that evolution of the U.S. dollar becoming digital. And like Jay was saying, it's used to send money between different institutions, and the current system's outdated, and it actually, there's a lot of companies that take a little fee along the way of that transfer, and that transfer takes more time. So cryptocurrency is seen to speed that up, especially coins like XRP. Its primary utility is money transferring. So it's seen as more cost effective. It's faster. You're not getting as many fees taken out when you're doing the traditional wire transfer, and it's not held to those same timelines like Jay had mentioned.
Okay, and so does that make more sense to you now, Will, or does that what questions would you have? Because you're a money guy, so
well, sure. But the first thing I thought was, what's it going to evolve to? You say it's evolving into a more digital deal. What is money evolving? I mean, where are we going with it? Number one, number two. You know, if you're going down to a store, you're not going to use the currency, but you're not going to use a cryptocurrency, right?
It depends on if that store adopts that as a payment option, because it's not like every cryptocurrency's utility is for the purpose of transferring money between. XRP is a good example where that is its primary use case. If they're trying to get the banks off the old style of transferring money and to use and adopt XRP as that new method. But there are businesses that accept transactions with cryptocurrency just like you would with a credit card. It's really not much different.
It makes more sense to me when you're talking about a wire, because mm-hmm. that is time constrained. Like, running a Visa card is still faster than paying with a cryptocurrency, or am I mistaken?
It depends on the business, because if you have a cryptocurrency and they accept that currency, it would just be a tap of your phone or a tap of a crypto wallet, and then it would take it out just the same speed.
And so the speed would be more on the back end. Like, what is that settlement time? Even like with a Visa right now, like my understanding is, if a business takes a credit card payment, there's still a delay in the time that money is then available to the business that took mm-hmm. in that payment.
Okay. And I undoubtedly understand the transaction costs.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because you're right. Every step along the way, somebody's taking a piece of it.
Sometimes multiple entities, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So again, I think that one of the things that I'm seeing, well, first of all, what I'm seeing is that I haven't gone overseas in years, but I remember going overseas, and the first thing you want to do is go get some pesos or some or some francs when you're in France, whatever it is,
right?
Or euros, I guess now. And you know, but I remember euros too. And you're always looking at how they're jobbing you on the transaction fees,
yeah, right, or the transfer rate, right?
So, yeah, or the transfer rate, or yeah, whatever it is.
Yep.
So I see that as an advantage. So an XRP, let's say, which is tied to treasuries, basically, correct, or the dollar. Is that, I think, believe that the types are so, stable coin. Let's just call it a stable coin. It's tied to some stable asset class.
So it's essentially like investing in XRP, as an example, is like basically trusting that or hoping that the banks adopt XRP as its primary mode of money transportation between different accounts and between different people. And so if the banks go off of their current methods and styles and they adopt XRP on a wide scale, it'll increase its value significantly. So that's like why most people invest into XRP, particularly mm-hmm. XRP.
Mm-hmm. So, but again, I guess it's kind of like if you want to just have money, instead of having money in a savings account, you could put it into XRP. And I guess or stable coin, and I guess if that asset class that's tied to that stable coin goes up, you have more money, right? Mm-hmm. You earn something on it, right. Like interest,
yeah.
Right? Or you lose money,
yeah.
If it go, you know. So again, I mean, just like T-bills go up and down every day, right? Right.
Will, not just every day.
You watch like those
hour to hour.
Yeah, minute to minute. You watch those all day in the lending business.
Yeah, and it affects everything.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It definitely goes through everything. The big question is, if it's tied to treasuries, and all of a sudden you have, give me just a second, this huge demand for these short-term treasuries, right? So that's theoretically going to drive the yield that they have to pay down. How is that going to affect everything else that's tied to treasuries or, say, mortgage-backed securities?
Well, what I was reading in some of these links that I got off of AI, of course, was the fact that it should make the advantage of these asset classes being tied to, let's say, 10-year T-bills,
yes,
bonds, is that it would potentially drive down the interest rates to make it better for consumers when they borrow money.
It would if they were buying a 10-year, possibly, but I think they're going a shorter term. I think they're looking at 2 years.
I don't know.
I'm asking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea either. I think a better way to explain like what we're saying is that XRP is, again, another example of a cryptocurrency. And I feel like cryptocurrency is almost like a buzzword. Like, it's scary. Like, I feel like in the next 5 years, there's got to be a different term that's used to market this mm-hmm. this technology.
Yeah.
Like, whether you want to call it, like, a digital dollar would be a way to represent, like, a stable coin. Because, like, stable coins are, is, for example, you have one USD. USDC is a stable coin, equals one US dollar. Our Tether is USDT. Equals one US dollar. So these are intended to remain close to the value of the US dollar, which is very different than like a XRP or a Bitcoin. These are going to be more of, it's the same technology, but what the asset that it's tied to does fluctuate more.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you have cryptocurrencies that you could invest in and treat like an investment, like a stock or a T-bill or whatever that may be. And then you have the stable coins, which are going to be different.
Okay. But Bitcoin is tied to
just the fact that it's a limited resource, and
it's just right. a limited number.
It's so
that's more about just investing and trying
right.
to make
correct.
Money. So yeah, there's
correct.
Definitely seems to be two different categories.
Yeah, so XRP is a technology, right?
Yeah.
So you're investing in the technology that is XRP. So it's not so much you think of XRP as like a single cryptocurrency coin, like you would a Bitcoin.
Yeah,
it's but different it, that way.
That I think has a lot to do with the fear that comes from like. Me and Barry,
yeah.
and people our age, right? Because one of them is just an investment tool that seems like it's tied to nothing, but
yeah.
the other well, right. is a little bit of a different deal.
Right.
So there's two categories.
There is, right? yeah.
Well,
but
I think
they got the same kind of name.
I mean, I think at some exactly. level, you know, I think at some level, Bitcoin is kind of a closer analogy would be to gold.
Correct.
Because yeah, yeah. But again, gold is a you know millennium long store of value, as is silver and other. You know, yeah. stuff like that, platinum and that yeah. kind of thing. So it's more accepted.
Right.
But I have noticed that Bitcoin was below 60,000 this morning. And I'm guessing that a lot of people, I was thinking maybe people are still investing in cryptos, but they're hedging with the stable coins against a Bitcoin in an attempt not to, you know, not to be totally exposed to just Bitcoin. I mean, what are you hearing anything like that? That people are hedging using the stable coins?
I would say the hedging that I see is more with, again, it's really important to separate the two. So, like, when you're investing, you're going to hedge with a better investment. And mm-hmm. stable coins are not, they're just not an investment.
Yeah, it's like a bank account. It's like a savings account. Yeah.
Correct. And, you know, if you're going to hedge a stock, you're not going to go...
Right.
You're not going to put money in a saving account because mm-hmm. yeah. you get, you know,
yeah.
no,
okay.
close to nothing on interest.
Well, I guess what I want to move on to the next topic before the break here, but
right.
I think what I got out of this young man, Will,
yes.
is that us old guys shouldn't put our heads in the sand and we need to keep watching this.
Yeah, I think we're a bit late, man. I think we should have jumped
well,
into
you're
this
not,
about 15 years ago.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you would think that, but there's such a large amount of the population that aren't investing in cryptocurrency that you're still ahead of the game even today.
Yeah.
So it's not all what right. you think.
And I do want to say, and before we leave this topic, you know, because of the Trump administration, I mean, it's becoming a thing. You know, the IRS has opined on the tax treatment.
Yep.
The Federal Trade Commission has provided guidance on scams. And so, yeah, so you should really talk to your investment advisor and people who know more about it than we do.
Oh, for sure.
about getting into it. But I think ultimately, you know, it's something we need to keep because it's not going away. That's
no,
for
it's
sure.
Not, yeah.
It doesn't appear to be going away.
Read yeah. the terminology. That's really what's key here is like understanding the different terms.
Okay. Let's move on real quickly. Let's talk a little bit about AI. And I think the two things that I want to get your take on. I mean, one of the biggest issues, of course, is that all of these, Zoomers, Gen yeah. Zers, and even younger millennials like you are worried that AI is going to take your job and you're not going to be able to work. You know, now you guys are gainfully employed in very good businesses. You know, people leave what you guys are doing. You know, but basically, I mean, we were talking the other day about how. You know, speakers are getting up at college commencements and getting booed. Well, what do you get millennials think about it? This whole thing. What are you hearing from your cohort, your generational cohort?
Yeah, again, I try to be open minded. So, like AI to me is almost like another industrial revolution. It's just a advancement. So like it's going to help with writing, with coding, with customer service, with legal research, business automation. So like it's something to be used as like a tool. The example I always like to give is, you know, I'm sure Barry would remember this, and most boomers would, is the, you know, and the, you used to have to go to a if you wanted to write a paper, you would go to a library,
right.
You would pull books out and you would cite books and actually go to a physical location to do that. And now today that would be, I mean, that'd be absolutely ridiculous to write a paper and go down to the library and pull a book to try and cite it. So it's just an advancement in technology. So I think that AI is scary because it could reduce the amount of just like basic labor that's needed, but those that are willing to adopt it and willing to change will be able to produce more work than they could have ever done by themselves.
Well, I heard somebody talking about this on one of the podcasts the other day, and it was reported that even though Disney is using more AI to do all their cartoons and whatever their animations, they're still hiring more and more people.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah. But they're just doing different things.
Yeah.
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 What do you, Will?
I got to say, I think it's a bigger shift than this.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I think it's a bigger shift. Like, now we have tools creating more and more efficient tools.
Right.
Yeah.
Before, people generally had to create the tools that made them more and more efficient.
Right.
Now the tools are doing it for us. And
that is the scary part.
Growth of technology.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, when we return, we're going to continue this for a few minutes, and then we're going to move on to politics and generational attitudes towards all kinds of different things. So stand by. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with my brothers from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Will Barnaby. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. The other topic, and I want to bring this up because I am having an interesting guest next week. A gentleman by the name, I think his name is James Walker. He's the CEO of a company on the East Coast that's building nano-nuclear power plants. And interesting, and they contacted me. They wanted to come on to a station that was in the Diablo Canyon area. Right. So I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, but it'll be an interesting conversation. But then there was also an article in the Wall Street Journal today about, you know, are we throwing too much money at these new nuclear technologies when we already know how to build nuclear reactor. So you know, again, so that's an interesting topic. But the bigger issue, I think, especially for rural communities, and I was just talking to a friend of mine who lives outside of Phoenix, they had to put a moratorium on building power plants because they don't have building data centers because they don't have enough electricity.
Yeah.
So again, this is another big problem in the areas. What do you have any thoughts on that, Will? I mean, you know,
I think we should have been building nuclear power plants for quite some time.
Yeah,
like obviously there were things that went bad, and the problem is there's a group of people that think nuclear and they think bomb,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, they think China syndrome and all the propaganda that we got fed in the 80s and 90s, for Three Mile Island for sure. Sure.
There definitely were mistakes, but they're undoubtedly can create a lot of energy and can be relatively clean now.
Yeah. Just about infinite energy.
Yeah.
And carbon free.
I don't know enough about these nano nuclear plants to really have an opinion that's strong, but for a long time, kind of felt like we should have been investing in nuclear power plants.
Perfecting it.
Yeah. You're going to suck at something when you start.
Right.
You got to do it a few times and take a few lumps before you get good.
Well, exactly.
You know, what are you guys? Is there something on the millennial horizon that's beyond nuclear power and all that kind of stuff?
Just what Elon says, we're going to space, and he's going to power AI data centers from space.
Well, wouldn't the hydrogen-powered cars and stuff like this that,
you know,
those really didn't take off. Those kind of flopped.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting topic. We didn't throw that in, but I'm going to throw that in real quickly. What do you guys think of Elon Musk? Because he's become so politicized now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, what did he start with? PayPal was his big deal, and sold it and made a bunch of money. And I mean, he's undoubtedly incredibly intelligent, a certified genius.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he's trying to do in terms of space is very cool. I don't know if he should have jumped into the political arena so heavily like he did, because now it's very much tarnished his reputation, which before was almost like a golden boy. Everybody was like, yeah, loved Elon, and then he started doing the political stuff, and it just kind of wrecked his reputation a bit. But I think he's got potential. He's doing cool stuff. You know, I think space travel is important. Understanding what's outside of our planet's important. Technology is important. Mm-hmm. So I don't know him on a personal level, obviously.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
He talks about you all the time.
Kevin. Oh, yeah, sure.
What do you think, Will?
I respect the curiosity. I think that that's his primary drive, is just his curiosity. He doesn't protect his patents. But sometimes when people are super intelligent in one area,
yeah,
maybe be a little lacking in another.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a yin and yang.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of his public appearances were cringy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say cringy is a nice way to say it.
Yeah, he's a little, he's on the spectrum.
Yeah, but I don't take political advice or, you know,
no
relationship
kidding.
Advice from, like, sports people either. Like, I never really understand how people, like, okay, this is what he's really good at. Let him go be really good at it. And if he's, words I can't say on the radio, not a nice person in other
ways.
It kind of is what it is.
There are some personal habits that trouble me.
Yeah,
sure.
But I will say he is a First Amendment warrior, and that's like that to me that makes him okay. I mean, ultimately, you know, as long as he's not breaking the law,
right?
Yeah, you know, people need to not be so sensitive, but.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking about high levels of sensitivity, let's discuss high level. Discuss the different generational attitudes towards politics, and I don't know. Well, let's start with you, because you know, I mean, everybody knows what my attitude about politics is at this point. So you know, you and I would say differ probably the most in our little group out of many things.
Oh yeah, we agree on lots and disagree on quite a bit as well.
Yeah,
you know, politics right now for me is, I think everybody is trying to take the effect and make it the cause. Like, it doesn't matter if you lean left. Right now, there's a large group of people all across all spectrums that don't think they're getting a fair shake. They don't think they're playing on a level playing field. And it's showing, you know? And now, with the populist movements on both sides, it basically gives them permission, if not even instruction, to stop blaming policy. And start blaming groups of people. And it's becoming problematic.
Anyway, we have a caller. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's on your mind?
You know, everyone is in an uproar over the data centers and the amount of energy they're going to consume. But I don't understand why those data centers can't be built so they could actually go into the community grid and provide energy for whatever community they're close to.
I think that's happening in some places where companies like Microsoft, I mean, they're actually at some of the data centers, they're building their own power plants of some nature, and then whatever isn't used for the data center will go be fed into the grid.
That's the way it should be.
We've had this technology for a long time in our refineries, and they have units called cogen units.
Yes.
And they take the gas that would normally be flared out, and they take that energy and put it through a generator and supply the rest of our refinery and the surrounding community.
Well, that's
I just don't get why that can't solve a lot of this problem.
Well, you know, there's a lot of problems that could be easily solved if the politics around them weren't so poisoned by different interest groups, I think, and we have that right now with Diablo Canyon. I mean, there are groups here. This is 10% of our California's grid power.
Well, that's why they kept that open.
Yeah,
but they knew they had to.
But there are still environmental groups that.
Oh, I'm sure. They'll never stop.
I know. Anyway, well, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
All right, real quickly. Because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So we talked about what do you guys think on the whole aspect of, I guess, really what Will is talking about is political discourse?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest change is that politics has become part of people's identity.
Right.
Less about, like you guys had mentioned, like, it's not a discussion about policy anymore. And so when you make politics about, you know, who you are because it's your identity, disagreements start to feel personal rather than just like an intellectual conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so most Americans really want the same thing. I don't know anyone that disagree with wanting a safe community, good economic opportunities, affordable housing, quality education, and a government that's accountable. But nobody can have those conversations when everyone's arguing, well, I, you know, feel this is how it should be.
Well, so that's an interesting question that I have that leads into my next topic. So we have this, they call themselves democratic socialists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really socialists or communists when it comes right down to it. I mean, there's nothing democratic about socialism or communism. I mean, when it comes right down, because again, it's top down, you know, versus bottom up kind of control. But, you know, talk about public safety. How does public safety square with letting criminals out of jails? I mean, one of these gals in New York City that just got nominated for that congressional seat, and now there's also one in Colorado that's running today. I mean, they just think we should just open up the jails and let all the criminals out and get them social workers. And I mean, so again, it's kind of hard. Don't you think it's kind of hard to have a conversation with somebody like that? That where you can get anything positive.
Depends on the conversation you're having, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think? Will has a thought.
I just don't think it's surprising.
You don't think it's a what?
I don't think it's surprising. I mean, it's been a long time that we've accepted this whole idea of a regular guy movement, this populism thing. And the scary part to me isn't, I mean, the right had it. They have a nationalist populist movement. In fact, they say it openly. Now the left are going the other way, and they're just blaming somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when the bridge gets made between the two. The two wings come together, and there's a lot of that starting to happen. I hope it doesn't get legs, but again, got to change the focus back to cause and effect, and how do we make things happen? And back to Jay's point, everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, back to the polarizing part of it is, like, social media is another, like, huge, big part of that, is every generation has political disagreements, but this is the first generation where algorithms are rewarding outrage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the loudest voice gets amplified, which can make the country seem more divided than people are in everyday life. Like, I don't walk outside my door worrying about what the left or the right are doing, but when you hop online, that's all it seems like, is everybody's disagreeing.
Is it going to make it different this time?
It's a good question.
I mean, we're talking about generational and generational changes. It's obviously not the first time it's occurred.
Right.
And the question is, these new things like social media and AI and all of these algorithms that drive people into different groups, is that going to change the outcome? Because typically, eventually it hits the fan and everybody settles out.
Right.
Yeah, I think that what's happening with the younger generations is that there's so much quick information, and no one's actually taking the time to educate themselves on, like, what's actually going on. And so a lot of the time you'll see, like, somebody protesting or be very upset about something, and they'll be asked a, you know, intellectual, detailed question, and they can't answer it. And it's because they're fueled with, not by information, like genuine information or educated information, they're filled by emotion.
We were having lunch today, and I said, I've never been... As long as I've been alive, information has never been this readily available.
Yeah, and it's
perspective
quick.
Perspective has never been in shorter supply.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so this leads me to the next thing. You know, we've talked about, and I sent around the book by Jonathan Turley, Rage in the Republic, and then I sent out his kind of like synopsis of it. And you made, you know, basically, I think we're seeing, and Kaylin made a good. I was looking for your email again. I deleted it by accident, but it was such a thoughtful email that you wrote, because really, I mean, it's like we're seeing in many regards what we saw. In the French Revolution, where the Democrat Party basically created the socialist ferment, and now the ferment is starting to kill off the originators, the Robes Pierres of the world, right. You know, who were the bourgeois, the middle class. What were your thoughts on that, Kaylin? Because I thought that was really, I didn't mean to spring it. I was looking for your email again, but it was a great response.
Yeah, I was interesting. You know, in school we're taught that the French Revolution is just like a bunch of people that were hungry, and the bread was being used to make cakes, and that's largely what caused it. And that's all I remember learning in school. And so when you actually dig into it, you find out that there was real rage from the people that were at that level and didn't have food, and there was a lot of mismanagement there, so that's justified. But there was also, you know, very affluent individuals high up in government, you know, what you would consider to be respected individuals that were fueling this fire in France to get a change in policies and politics for their own benefit, and it definitely backfired on them. So I thought that was interesting because I didn't know that until I actually wanted to like be educated enough to understand it. So it wasn't just about bread and cake, that's for sure.
No, it wasn't. Absolutely.
Well, I think it's scary.
Yeah.
Because I see it happening now. I mean, how many people do you see that take on some social issue that is not theirs?
All the time.
Every day.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, I think this is, I mean, we are definitely, you know, in the winter of the fourth turn, in the fourth turning, and we're watching again, all the institutions that we've been used to for the last 70 years are disintegrating before our eyes. And, right. And I think that's but in the French Revolution, I mean, it's so in the American Revolution, what was dissolving was the bonds between English Americans, American English, that had moved, you know, and the crown and that system of government. You know, there was some pretty, and if you read Jonathan Turley's book on this, I mean, there were still a lot of violence amongst the colonists upon each other, mm-hmm. especially, you know, the loyalists, you know, that were, you know, and there was a lot of property confiscation and all that, but it was nothing like the destruction of the French society. You know, it was the monarchy that went down. It was the church that went down. And again, it was what disturbs me the most, and about the DSA, the socialists, and the comparison with the French Revolution, is so much of it is about envy, envying other people's stuff. That we don't have it, so we're just going to go take it.
Yeah, but like one of the reasons that this country exists in the way it exists is that people felt like if they came here, they could gain land and they could gain social status.
Right.
And that it was actually possible that mm-hmm. they could come here and do some things. In France, at that particular time, like there's a little bit of a difference in... We had a meritocracy mm-hmm. compared to a, Jay hates it when I say this, a learned helpless situation.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, in essence, I mean, the British had their glorious revolution 100 years before the American Revolution. So a lot of that stuff, a lot of those things got worked out between the Protestants and the Catholics and over like a 30 or 40 year period. And then a lot of those people came to the United States wanting a brand new life, or came to the colonies wanting a brand new life.
Yes.
And
seeing opportunity.
Yeah. Let's shift gears before we go into the break.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to ask you this, Jay.
Yes.
Now that we just had a moon mission a few months ago, do you still believe the moon landing was a it was all filmed in a studio?
Well, that's such a loaded question. Put it all out there.
Oh, don't! What you count on me for, right?
Because we did a moon mission, right? We didn't do another moon landing.
Well, not yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's weird that, you know, in the '60s we could land on the moon, and today we decided just to slingshot around the moon?
Yeah, well, the Apollo 8 mission was just slingshotting across around the moon before the moon landing.
Yeah,
there are several slingshots around the moon.
Okay.
Okay. So
I do agree with the
the argument that you and Will both made, that I think that it'd be harder to have faked the moon landing with the technology that was available than to have just actually gone. But the moon landing is just super weird in general.
All right. You're okay with the moon landing in 1969, right, Kalen?
Yeah, I mean, I can see the point argued that we would want to trick the Soviets into thinking we did it before them. That,
okay.
Like, it makes sense, like, why we would try to stage that. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Jay in the terms of, like, you know, why don't we have, like, buildings on the moon yet? You know what I mean? I feel like we should have already been there, like, 10 years ago.
Because Elon wasn't around.
Yeah. Well, now he just wants to go straight for Mars.
Which, and I don't know that they had a purpose yet. Like, lack of gravity is the
purpose.
It
was just
right?
Getting there, picking up some rocks, getting there, getting back.
We like to do things just because we can.
Yeah. So. All right. What you know, so, Will, what's your favorite conspiracy theory of the day?
Oh, I don't know. I actually watched that conspiracy theory podcast thing. Most of them are baloney. I think.
What do you think about the UFOs? Sticking into space they're called unidentified. They're called something else.
They changed it. Yeah,
they changed it to something.
I don't know why. Why they have to change it? I don't know. I definitely feel like there's something unidentified that people have seen flying around.
And it's us.
I'm not saying there's little green men in there or whatever aliens would be, but there's undoubtedly something mechanical that we don't know about that's been caught.
UAPs.
UAPs.
Yeah. Why wouldn't aliens come down here and make their presence known? I don't know. Like, they're not scared of us.
I don't even like talking to people. Why wouldn't aliens want to talk to us?
Yeah, but we're not threatening.
No, but you're not intelligent enough to have the conversation.
All right. Well, when we return after the break, we're going to discuss what I think are the three most important aspects of the Declaration of Independence. So stand by. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with my buds from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Will Barnaby, Kalen Clark, and Jay Leach. You can still call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. As I mentioned, next week I have James Walker, CEO of Nano Nuclear Energy, and then Greg Haskin from CoLab. And we're going to do our pre-fair survey of what happened in the county the last 6 months. Okay. So in this final segment, I'd like to discuss three concepts of the Declaration of Independence with you guys. And I'm going to read them very quickly. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station in which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then finally, I've got two questions on those two aspects of it. And then the last sentence of the Declaration, which is, and for the support of this Declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And this is what all 50 or 60 signers of the Declaration signed to. So this was life or death to them. It was clearly existential. So with that thought in mind, my questions are this. Do our rights come from God or not, or the government? Who wants to start? Let me preface this for a moment. We all have different conceptions of God at this point.
Yeah, sure.
So that's why I'm asking this question. Right. So what do you think, Will?
I think people are born with certain rights, and they do not come from the government. Government only has power that we choose to give it.
No, it's natural rights.
Natural rights. Natural
right.
Rights, yeah. Absolutely.
They're imprinted on your heart.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And people are willing to fight for them.
Yeah. Jay?
Yeah.
Mr. Cynic?
I think that one of the most revolutionary ideas in the Declaration was Jefferson wasn't saying government gives us rights.
Okay.
He was saying our rights exist before government. Mm-hmm. So government's job is to protect those rights, not create them. If a government creates rights, then it can also take them away.
Mm-hmm.
The Declaration flips that idea on its head and says our rights are inherent.
Right. What about you, Caitlin?
I would say that life is very important. I think we should all be more appreciative for our lives, and that human life in particular is interesting in our sense of being sentient and in the way that we are. And so with that, I think should come a respect for that life, for everyone to have.
You just can't say the G word, can you?
I'm just saying. Yeah, I mean,
again, that's why I'm asking the question, because we all have this different perception, and it's part of it's generational, and a lot of it's experiential, you know.
And I got to say, a lot of it sounds like them just saying, hey, we know you're never going to see us as equals, so we've got to go.
Well, and again, I mean, one of the articles I sent out to you guys talked about how this all was derived from the Magna Carta from 1266,
right,
when, you know, the barons of England were tired of the king bossing them around, and they were paying for it.
Yeah.
And so they basically wanted some respect, and then there were several, there was an even prior glorious revolution in England where they fought it out over this whole Magna Carta thing. So again, this didn't come out of thin air. So here's the next question.
Okay.
How would you, and let's start with Caitlin.
Okay.
How would you define the pursuit of happiness?
I've never been asked that question before. I think it's an evolution. It's an evolution as you go throughout life. As you go become younger and older, you sort of figure out what that means to you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, as I've gotten a little bit older, I've found that it's important to focus on the little things that make me happy throughout the day, mm-hmm. so that all of the bad stuff that's going on doesn't seem as heavy. And then trying to become more community oriented with my friends and family that are around me and my community that mm-hmm. I live in. So I think that that's been a way that I've tried to become more grounded and be more happy in life.
Whose responsibility is it to give you happiness?
It's yourself, for sure. Mm-hmm. You have to be at peace within your own mind before anything else can really even happen.
So all the DSA kids that are complaining that Apple iPhones are going to be $100 more, and that we need to take over Apple. The government needs to take over Apple. It's kind of, again, that's an envy thing that I feel a lot of in today's society.
Yeah, it's our government's job. Are becoming less and less like genuinely educated.
Well, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The Declaration doesn't promise anyone happiness. It promises you the pursuit of happiness.
The opportunity.
That's
right.
The key.
Right. 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 How about you, Will?
I think it comes down to the only ceilings that are placed on you are placed there by you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. If you're willing to go for something and make it happen, you should be able to make it happen.
Quick question. The final pledge. Would you be willing to take, as the bumper music comes up, who would take that pledge today in this room?
Oh, yeah.
You would take it.
Uh-huh.
Will?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we're unanimous. We'd all take it. So, guys, thanks for coming in. It's always fun to have you. And
thanks for having us.
We'll have a great summer. I know.
There you go.
All right, folks, take care. I'll look forward to talking to you next week. Have a great semi-quintennial week. All right, take care.
That's a hard word to say.
It is.